Now, according to the latest My Home Property Price report, property prices in Donegal are continuing to rise. Joanne Geary is Managing Director of My Home and joins us now. Thanks for joining me today. Good morning.
Good morning.
Right, so how are prices looking in Donegal?
Well, what we're seeing in Donegal is that property prices rose by just over €4,000 in the year. The median asking price for a property in the county is now €250,000. But actually, when you delve into the data a bit more, you'll see that in the last 3 months of 2025, there was very little change in prices in Donegal. And certainly that's a trend line that we're seeing all across the country. As the property market is now starting to moderate and stabilise, somewhat, which is welcome news. We're coming off the very strong strong price increases that we were seeing in a year, 18 months ago, and the market has started to show signs of stabilising, certainly in the last 3 or 4 months of 2025.
What might be driving that? Because in terms of new build, certainly we seem to be behind targets, and I'm not sure, or maybe there has been with short-term letters selling on properties, there might be more properties available to buy, or is just the demand cooling off?
I think what we're seeing here is a bit of an affordability stretch. So the market has had reached its peak, certainly, you know, a year, 18 months ago or so. And the market has started to stabilise now, more in line with wage growth. So wage growth in 2025 got to about 5%. And nationally, if you're looking at asking price inflation for property, it got to 5.4%. So what you're seeing now is the rate of inflation for property stabilising more in line with wage growth. And that's a good thing because it shows that, you know, there is stability coming into the market. And certainly that is welcome news. But just for clarity and just so your listeners are absolutely clear in the message here, we are still in a market where property prices are increasing. It's the pace at which property prices were increasing has started to slow down a bit. Still very strong demand and very low supply for property.
Are we at the top of the market, or maybe statistically we are if increases are in line with sort of general inflation? Do you see any sort of price reductions in the on the horizon?
Not on the immediate horizon, Greg, to be honest, because it all comes down to supply. So, and if you're looking at really strong demand, and there's very little on the horizon that you could see that would dampen that demand, because we have more people than ever living here before. You can certainly see it coming through in the mortgage data. You know, an 8% increase in people who are mortgage approved, that's pent up demand for property. And certainly you can see the demand metrics are continuing to stay very robust. But actually, you know, what will make a difference to prices is supply and what happens there. So in 2025, we delivered 34,000 units, new units of housing to the market, which was an increase, and that's good. And that's to be welcomed. But certainly it's still short of the government's own target of 41,000 units for 2025. If we see 2026 as a year that's going to bring us a lot more supply in property, that will have an impact on pricing, and pricing might start to taper down even more. Is that on the immediate horizon? I think it's quite difficult to see that we're going to get, you know, building and supply at scale and at the volume we need.
Could we be on something of a roller coaster? Because I presume if we increase demand and the price begins to fall, that also then brings in a cohort of people that owning a property becomes more affordable, if you know what I mean. So the price begins to meet demand and then it either stabilizes at a slightly lower level or begins to creep back up again. Is that something you would anticipate?
Well, I think in the immediate term, we're looking at prices continuing to increase at, you know, certainly more modest single digit growth, probably like 3-4%, we think, for 2026. We'd like to see more supply coming through this year. You know, certainly you'd like to think that we could hit 40,000 units this year with the changing additional work that's happened on the housing policy. You'd like to see more of that coming through, which would be really about new builds. I think the sector where is very much stuck right now is the secondhand trader market. So people that are living in an existing home, they're tending not to put their property on the market. because they can't really find something to buy no. within their area and within their price range. You know, and just to give you like a metric on that, there's just over 12,000 properties available for sale on My Home at the moment. A decade ago, that would have been double, which is really down to that trader market. So, you know, more needs to be done to enable those people to be able to trade and move. You know, and the government certainly has done a lot for new builds and for first-time buyers, and that's all really, really welcome. I think the second-hand trader market needs some attention now at this stage.
We are hearing lots of reports of accidental landlords or people with investment properties with new regimes coming in, exiting the market. Is that reflected in these figures? Are we seeing more second-hand homes, more homes coming to market that could be attributed to that?
I think we have started to see some of that happening for sure. You know, that new legislation for tenancies and landlords is due to kick in March. Now, in reality, you know, landlords would have been exiting the market over the last 2 years anyway. But you'll probably see that start to take up a bit of pace now, certainly in the first 6 months of the year. Anecdotally, we're hearing that evidence from our estate agent customers. You're also seeing it in the Residential Tenancies Board data, where they're seeing an increase in landlords giving notices, you know, in terms of their plans to move their tenants on because they're selling. So that will have an increase in supply, certainly for sure, for that second-hand homes market. It remains to be seen exactly, you know, the impact of that. And in one way, that's a good thing because it's more stock into the secondhand market, but then it'll start to put, you know, upward pressure on rents again. So that's
and
the
of
other
course,
side
those
of
houses don't actually always end up on the market, but that's almost a different conversation altogether. Asking prices versus set prices that are agreed. you use asking prices as the metric, then we'll see another set of figures where it's, you know, the price paid, etc. So what is, in this market, the difference between the asking price and then the sale agreed price?
So the asking price, you're absolutely right, is the advertised price as it appears on My Home. And then obviously for the secondhand sales, there's the final sold price, which appears on the property price register. So our data is based on the asking price, but we also analyze the rate at which we call a premium that is being paid over the asking to get to the final sold price. As we got to the end of the year, that premium that was being paid got to just over 7%. So at certainly during the summer months, it got to a peak of 8.8%. So again, what you're starting to see in the transaction data is that rate at which people were bidding up properties to the final sold price has started to cool off a bit as well. And our data would be very much in line with the CSO's own reporting on that as well. So, and that's a good thing, but it still is a market. You know, clearly if people are paying 7% over the asking price, it still is a market where people are competing against one another and driving bids up, but just not at the same rate as it would have been during the summer.
And finally, the median asking price for property in the county now here is 250,000 euro. And people are listening and they always do and go, well, where are these blooming houses? I can't see them. Every house I see is 300 grand, 380, sure. 425. So what is the sample property that's being used in this survey?
So the median is a metric that gives a bit more, I suppose, transparency to have a benchmark. So the median is a benchmark price. We strip out all the really expensive properties at the top of the funnel, and then the really inexpensive like sites, vacant homes, you know, to give a more kind of reflective price for what actually property is selling at. We use the median asking price not so much to talk about the price, but to talk about the percentage increase or decrease in pricing. And it's a benchmark that we use, and it's a commonly accepted economic indicator. You know, absolutely, you know, you'll be very challenged to find a property in Donegal for 250,000. We know that. But it's the percentage that we try and focus in on. And we do keep an eye on that median asking price in terms of upwards or downwards pressure. But look,
and are these all houses, or do you use a semi-detached three-bed as an example? So when you talk about, and the reason I ask this is because there's so many of these blooming surveys come out, and it seems to come out one after the other, and they almost seem to contradict each other. So it's just for me even to get a handle on this. So are we, if we are talking about a three-bed semi-detached house, and we live in a very rural county, is that actually really reflective of the overall housing market? I mean, I'm sure we have much fewer three-bed semi-detached than Dublin or Sligo might have, for an example.
Yeah, I mean, we analyse a couple of different property types, three beds, four beds, two-bedroom apartments as well, which, you know, I accept mightn't be as relevant for Donegal, but it would very much so be in some of the cities. So, you know, we analyse various different property types. What we're trying to do is bring a bit of a trend line to overall what's happening in the county. And overall what's happening in the county is strong price increasing, but that would have been more at the start to the middle point of the year, and now pricing starting to stabilise and remain flat. That trend line could be certainly rolled out for all property types within the county. And all of the detail around the various different types is on the website if you're interested in three, four-bed, two-bed apartments
all
and
right.
so on.
Joanne Geary, Managing Director of My Home, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Look after yourself. Take care. All right, no credit where it's not due. I got it very wrong. The Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have confirmed that Ireland will vote against the Mercosur trade agreement tomorrow. Yesterday, Micheál Martin was non-committal on it, saying they'd make a decision today, and I clearly underestimated the influence the independent ministers and TDs in the coalition had on the government. They were very much opposed to it, but Ireland is going to vote no. That being said, it is likely to be approved on Friday and then goes to a vote before MEPs in a week or two. The chair of AIMTU in Donegal is Rebecca McDade. I presume you're welcoming this decision by government not to back the Mercosur deal.
Yes, Greg. And, you know, although it's great that we are informed that they have done that, but it's just at the 11th hour, holding out and holding out and holding out for that is ridiculous. What is really concerning, Greg, is the fact that this particular banned hormone has been allowed to enter a food chain, and it's called Estradiol 17B. So our Irish farmers are under so much regulations with their beef and all of their animals, and they have to contend with so many things, regulations, and the very fact that this has been allowed to happen, and this particular meat has been allowed to be put on our shelves in Ireland is absolutely, it's a stab in the back for our Irish farmers.
The bottom line is though, as you quite rightly pointed out, and there's been a great deal of investigation into this by the Irish Farmers Journal, this is problematic for Irish farmers, even if this beef were the best in the world. No hormones in it, no genetically modified food. The bottom line is this, regardless of the quality of the beef, floods the European market into which we sell, which is a significant problem. It would seem that the food safety argument has been lost. This now is about competition, and we have a big problem.
Well, if you bring it right down to sensible conversation, the very fact that they're bringing animal meat in from the likes of Brazil, they're chopping down the wood in the Amazon to allow for animals to be imported from that area to be farmed in that area, and they're taking down what we would call the lungs of the world, where we are taking down the trees and we're actually importing the meat from there to Ireland. You have to look at the air miles that's going to take. So the carbon footprint that you have, all of those type of things has to be taken into consideration. And that obviously hasn't. And that, you know,
I think we're that argument, I agree with you, and I've made that argument a lot, but I mean, you wouldn't be in favour, I presume, would you, of the tough measures that are being put on motorists and farmers to reduce our emission levels, would you be in favour of them?
Listen, the point is the fact that they're actually chopping down trees in another area to farm the land and telling us that we're not, you know, importing the meat into us where we're not allowed to use our own beef, where there would be absolutely no carbon footprint as much as comparison for the size of Ireland. If you're travelling meat from up and down the country in Ireland, you drive for 7 hours, you're over the edge, Greg.
Yeah.
So how long is it going to take them to get the meat over from there? But the thing is, you know, what you really need to look at here is it makes a mockery of the whole carbon reduction debate. That's what it does in that particular aspect of it alone. The fact that the grain is actually, you know, a genetically modified grain that these animals are fed with, that's horrendous. We're not allowed to do that here. The other aspect you have is that they are allowed to have to buy prescription over the counter, you know, what would normally be prescription stuff here. They're allowed to buy that over the counter in Brazil and give it to the animals. So there's no traceability there.
Yeah, and you're quite right. And that was all highlighted quite extensively in the Farmers Journal. But it does seem now Italy has dropped its resistance to this. It's done a U-turn. This seems like it is going to happen. So we have to discuss post-Mercosur deal now, because it looks like 10,000 farmers in Athlone on the weekend aren't going to change this. So what supports do you want to see for Irish farmers now going forward post-Mercosur? Because it seems that's a tide we cannot push back now.
Well, we need the people to actually buy our own Irish farming products.
Yeah, but we export the majority of our beef into European markets. We can't appeal to French and Germans to do that, right? So what would you like to see this government do to support the farmers, given the reality we're facing into?
Well, number one, they've got to listen to the farmers. They're going to have to listen to the needs of the farmers. With the regulations that's on our farmers, they're going to have to work with them on that as well. The farmers are putting so much time into all of their work, and Italy has not actually given their approval yet. That's another thing. So we need to wait till we hear what is happening with the rest of the countries as well. But the point is, we need Ireland to stand up for Ireland. We need our government to stand up for Ireland. This has been a massive, massive mistake on the government's part, on the Department of Agriculture and our government in general. They are the people who are making the decisions and has allowed this to happen as it stands.
Yeah, but they've opposed it, Rebecca. They would say,
They're only opposing it this morning, Greg, but... Okay. You know, they've left it, as I said, they've left it to the 11th hour, which they should not be, you know, they need to be thinking ahead, and they should have known that this should not have been allowed. And I believe that it is only because this report has come out that they have decided to turn their back on it.
Okay.
Now we'll wait and see how long that's going to last.
Okay. Rebecca McDade, Chair of Ain't Doing Donegal, thank you. Fiona Molloy is National President of the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association. It's kind of a dual news here, isn't it, Phelim, in that, you know, the Irish government says it will vote against the EU-Mercosur trade deal, but until something else changes, it still looks like it will get over the line.
Yeah, good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners. Look, the Irish Natura and Hill Farmers Association very much welcome the decision by the Irish government to vote against the Mercosur trade agreement. However, at this point in time, the indications are that because of the fact that the European Union are going to use the weighted majority voting system, that this deal will actually be carried, which is disappointing. Now, at an earlier stage, you know, there were opportunities for the Irish government to make their opposition very much clear on this, but even at this late stage, it is a welcome development. What the benefit of that is in the longer term is very difficult to know. I know that once the if it has carried at the meeting in Brussels on Friday, the deal then has to come back to the European Parliament, where all the MEPs have actually to ratify it. So while it may well be carried this weekend, there is another step along the road, and this is where I think that the MEPs representing Irish people need to stand up and be counted and to vote against the deal when that opportunity arises within the European Parliament.
But Phelim, even if they do, we have the government's position now, which backs the views of the Irish farming community. We could have the MEPs, let's just say for argument's sake, that back the views of the Irish farmers. But Italy are looking for one final deal. They want the threshold between the level of imports and the falling of prices in the EU to be made smaller from 8% to 5%, right? And that would trigger a stalling of imports from South America, right? If they get over the line, they'll drop their opposition. So we're going to have to deal with farming in a post-EU Mercosur deal scenario, potentially. What needs to be done to protect Irish farming in that what seems to be inevitable situation?
Yeah, well, we're entering into the next round now of talks on the new common agricultural policy. And the fallout from this trade deal obviously will have to be dealt with. But I think there's a point we made in relation to this deal. It's not just going to impact on farmers, but it's going to impact on rural economies to a great extent because of the reliance of structures and that from an economic point of view and our regions. So it has a wider implications than just the farming community from an economic point of view. And of course, we're also very much concerned about the human health aspects of the type of meat that's likely to be imported due to the use of medicines and chemicals that wouldn't actually be allowed within the EU. So there are a number of issues around this whole deal that are very worrying across a number of areas. So that's something that needs to be looked at in the longer term as well.
All right, Phelim, thanks for taking the call at short notice. We do appreciate that. A caller says, it's time Ireland took a vote to leave the EU. England is our main market and they are no longer in the EU, so it doesn't matter. Regulation with the EU has got out of hand. The bigger a group gets, the more out of hand they get. We no longer need that European money. Well, 47% of our beef goes to the UK, 41% of it goes to the EU, which is very, very significant. The difference is we export to the UK, which doesn't produce that much beef. They need to buy in beef to feed the people. The EU's different. There's enough beef in the EU. We're going to be exporting into a market whereby we're fighting for space on the shelves. So that's where the problem is. And, you know, 41, 42% of our beef goes to the EU. So it really is not small fry. It is very, very significant. And we're doing very well in the British market, but that's because they don't have enough beef. It's very different in the EU. And as I say, there's not much difference between the level of exports to the UK versus the EU. So it's not insignificant. And we aren't independent of the EU, if the truth be told. Okay, welcome back to the Greg Hughes Show here on Highland Radio. And tomorrow's Friday, of course, we have the Friday panel for you. We've moved it into the second hour, though, so it runs from 10 to 11, which actually works quite well for guests and what have you getting onto that, which is good. And we have Seamus Gunn tomorrow. We're retaining, of course, your legal questions because there's great interest in that. We're retaining everything, really, by the way, pretty much. We're just it's just a little bit shorter. So if you have legal questions for Seamus Gunn, get them into us now. Now, let's have a social media roundup with our own Shannon Wilkins. Good morning to you.
Hey, Greg. What's crack?
I'm doing good. You know, new year, but still need to be kept up to date with what's happening, right? Okay, so you've been seeing what's happening in the world of social media, conversation, podcasts, etc. Abby Parkinson, who is she?
So she is an influencer from County Fermanagh, actually.
Ah.
And she has faced... That's not the video yet.
Oh, you can see the screen.
Yeah,
thanks,
I can see the screen
Danny.
Now. So she's facing a dilemma. Should she stay in London? She moved over to further her career. She's a TikToker and actress. But she says because she has to travel for work so much anyway, she could stay in Ireland. And there's been this whole poll online, should you stay or should you go? And people are actually saying stay in Ireland. It's the poll's winning because I just thought it was nice. New year, people be thinking, changing, should I move away? But we actually have so much going for us here in Ireland.
Stay. And I think so too.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lovely country and we have to highlight where the problems are and where the deficits are, but I wouldn't live anywhere else. But obviously, career-wise, she has to consider that. The White Rabbit trend on TikTok, what is this?
This one was a wee bit confusing for me. I had to
I'm Banjax then.
You're Banjax. So first I kind of saw it with people after they'd given birth, and I was like, so is it something to do with the baby? What is it? But it's a traumatic event that happens in your life and it changes you forever. So you don't want to be visited by the white rabbit.
Ah, yes. But it's inevitable.
At some point you will be.
There's always a trauma, and you best prepare yourself for it. Okay, so the white rabbit event. Is that where people just discuss what their white rabbit event was?
What their white rabbit event was. But I suppose now, like back in the day, you would have heard people say, oh, it was the fairies who did it if anything bad in your life happened. Whereas maybe this is like another kind of historical, mythological thing.
Well, I'm still not cutting down a fairy tree, whether it's the white rabbit or not. VMM podcast, what are these guys on about? Go on, what?
So
stop looking at that screen, switch it off.
Sorry. Tin Tie and Letterkenny, have you had it? Yeah.
I'm sure I have.
I mean, it's nice. But I'm not a diehard like some people.
Yes.
I was explaining to people, whenever we get an Indian, we have to get a Tin Tie for someone else in our house because they love it that much.
Yeah.
And if we're all ordering from a different Chinese, we have to go to the Tin Tie. And then in this video as well, they mentioned that you can never get them on the phone. There are instances when we've literally done laps of the town and waited
so
for
busy.
The Tin Tie.
But if I'm having an Indian meal, as we know it in the West here, for me, it's about whether or not it's cooked with coconuts or it's cooked with tomato sauce, so it's softened down. So am I going to get into trouble if I play what they're about to say?
No, there's nothing bad in it.
Tin Tie and Letterkenny's a cult, boy. See, you say something bad about it. First question is, what is your favourite takeaway?
You know what? I get this wee takeaway at a Chinatown across the road from the grill.
Oh, yeah.
Boys.
That's his favourite place.
I get this wee thing, right? Don't ask me how you order it, right? Lauren orders it. It's like you nearly get a wee bit of everything, right? So you get your chicken curry, you get chicken balls, but you get fried noodles, you get your egg fried rice.
A big box.
But it's like, you know them wee meals you get, but she more or less gets all these different ones. And then, you know, when you spend over like 20 sheets, you get the salt and chili chips for free, you know? Boys, it's like pick and mix.
Oh, lovely. Thank you very much indeed. You didn't fully check that, Shannon. I was worried about that and now you've got me into trouble. My apologies for any swear words that leaked out there. It was just one. But it wasn't a full swear word, it was kind of a part of one. The thing about it is those three lads were clearly hungry when they're having that conversation. You know what I mean? That was obvious what happened. Right, now, The Housemaid. This is a film that cost something like $35 million to make. It's going to make $250 million. It's absolutely massive.
It is, and they already have a Housemaid 2 confirmed, but I went to go see it last week and... We were actually saying how busy the cinema was. You know the way sometimes you go to the cinema, it's not busy, but everyone was on a Housemaid buzz. So you're sitting down enjoying the film, then you're like, oh, this is a wee bit psycho, some mental health problems here, then there's domestic abuse. Like when you come back and your mind is just in overdrive thinking more about it.
So what would you give it out of 10?
I think I'm going to say 9. Like people are saying there's 3 books and they're saying... There's actually pretty level between the books and the movie, which usually doesn't happen. So I might even go read the books.
Yeah, and it's some people are describing it as like the Basic Instinct of this era. It is raunchy too, though, isn't it?
There is a bit of raunchy in it. Like it's rated 15A, and I think it should nearly be 18s.
I'm thinking back to Fionnuala Rabbit. You know, would she watch it with her grandmother?
It depends what kind of grandmother you have.
She wouldn't watch it with her grandmother. You know? That's what I'm telling you. Speaking of granny and granddads. Putting on their clothes until they notice. What's this about?
So this is a new trend. So obviously everyone would have been gathered around over Christmas and you just go into your granny or granddad's wardrobe. Everyone takes an item of clothing and you have to see, does your grandparent notice?
And would you try it?
I don't know, to be honest. Like, you'd have to be very sneaky. And then the wee kids, they wouldn't get away with it unless you put them in, like, a pair of socks or something.
Right, okay. Now, finally, Miss Marmalade's page for sexy singletons. This keeps popping up on my Facebook page, and I don't know. I want to approach this carefully, right? Because there's a bit of fun in it as well, but at the same time, there's a danger it could creep into being used to embarrass people or shame them or a disgruntled ex. I'm not saying that's happening, right? But it seems to be incredibly popular.
It's getting more and more local as time goes on. So originally I was kind of seeing like people from Derry, people from Inishowen, but there's a few Carrigard people in there now too, yeah. Greg. Yeah.
Okay. So they're throwing images up of singletons in inverted commas.
You nominate a friend and you tell the page a bit about them, what type of person they're looking for, what they do for fun, and then at the end it says who they're nominated by. But I think the more funny part of it is like your friend that nominated you, because you're going, why did you do that to me?
Yeah, I think it's good fun. I don't want to be a boring you-know-what, but I think that's going to be a problem because there's going to be a case where it's going to be abused and it'll be taken down, and that's just the way it is. Shannon, thank you. It's time to preview Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast with its presenter, Chris Ashmore. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Right now, anyone thinking of growing their business or indeed beginning a business in 2026, an important date for the diary coming up?
Yes, just to let people know that the local enterprise office is hosting a virtual business support clinic. Now, this takes place on Friday week. That's January the 16th. You can go online and basically you will find out about the various services and supports that are available. So look, if be it you already in business, maybe you want to expand, you have a new idea, or if it's something absolutely new and you want to see if it has merit in going further, well, this is a good opportunity just to see what supports are out there. And certainly the feedback has always been very positive.
How do you go about signing up for something like that?
Well, if you just go on to the local enterprise website, you'll find the links there. They're also on social media, and it's all pretty straightforward.
A lot of work goes on around the year to try and ensure we do as best as we can out of an important element of our economy, and that's tourism.
Absolutely. And this is the time of year, Greg, that we have a number of big holiday shows. And there's one coming up in Belfast this weekend at the Waterfront International Convention Centre. It's expected to attract around 10,000 visitors. Donegal Tourism will be there, and there'll be a number of businesses, the likes of Fannethead Lighthouse, Glencolumbkill Folk Village, Arnold's Hotel, Wild Atlantic Camp, amongst others. So it's a great way of connecting with people. And then there's another trade show later in the month in Dublin, similar with Donegal exhibits there. And there'll also be the new Go Visit Donegal brochure. It's a 48-page brochure packed full of ideas of what to do and see in the county. And you can also download that brochure by going to the Go Visit Donegal website.
All right, some opportunities coming up in Inishowen for the new year.
Yes, if you're in Inishowen, or if you want to move to Inishowen, you're interested in maybe work there, there's job vacancies. The Inishowen Development Partnership website, they are now hosting a list of job vacancies. So there could be an opening there for you. So just go, if you just Google Inishowen Development Partnership, and you'll find out the details on that.
We were talking about industries that are doing very well, not least in the grocery, etc. Markets. Tesco UK and Ireland, their profits have been published.
Yes, now there isn't actually a breakdown for the Irish figures. It's all lumped together, but the profits for Tesco in the UK and Ireland for last year, it's going to end up over 3 billion pounds sterling. So huge money. Tesco in Ireland, food sales rose by over 5% last year, and they opened 5 new stores. So certainly Tesco are doing well.
Yeah, what's coming up on the show this week, Chris?
Well, this week, Greg, I've been speaking to Dr. Siobhan Murray, the founder of Blue Poppy Dentistry and Orthodontics. Now, she's a native of Omagh and a graduate of Trinity College in Dublin, and she opened her first practice in Donegal Town. That was back in 2010. Then in 2019, a second practice was opened on the Pierce Road in Letterkenny, and the company has grown over the years, embracing the latest technology, offering an expanding range of treatments. And very shortly, there'll be a third practice, and it's going to be located in the Letterkenny Shopping Centre, so there'll be a big footfall of people right outside the front door and a chance to see all that they offer. And indeed, I think we have a clip here. Dr. Siobhan, she's really looking forward to this latest development.
Blue Poppy number 3 is about to open in the Letterkenny Shopping Centre. We're quite close to Tesco's, just next to the pharmacy there. And really, this is taking Blue Poppy to a new level. We have our, you know, our digital tech and everything like that. We've encompassed that, but now we want to present dentistry in a different way. People tend to be afraid of dentists, dentistry. It's a bit of a chore to have to make an appointment, park a car, that sort of thing. So with our new premises, we'll be promoting our aligners. We'll be promoting our composite bonding, our airflow. So people can actually come in. If they decide that they want treatment, they can go ahead. Most of the time, they probably won't need an appointment, especially in our early days. But basically, it provides a window to our work and our practices.
Yeah, interesting to hear the voices behind these businesses, Chris, which the podcast, that's what it's all about. It's available for you to listen at your leisure now, to stream or download from our website, Spotify, and on the Apple platform as well, if you prefer. And Chris, obviously, it's broadcast at the weekend on Highland Radio.
That's right, Greg. It'll be on after the 6 o'clock news on Sunday.
Chris, thank you very much indeed. We look forward to seeing you next week. That's Chris Ashmore. And that business news has moved now from a Wednesday to Thursday. Dahi on YouTube says, why can't we sort out Letterkenny University Hospital wait times in the ED? 10 hours in it yesterday as a cancer patient for treatment before you get seen. Not acceptable. And herein lies the problem. Today, there are 53 people who have been deemed sick enough to be admitted to the hospital that are awaiting a bed. 53 people just waiting on a bed. That's not how many are in ED. That's how many were in ED. And the doctors have said, look, you're going to need some acute care here. Of those, 18 are in and around the emergency department, 35 on wards elsewhere. So there's your answer, Dahi. And by the way, I hope you're okay and your treatment is going well and you got sorted and are out and are as healthy as possible as you continue your recovery. But that's why now. How do we... Then we were talking earlier on and yesterday about home care packages. You know, how many of those 53 can't get a bed because there's someone in the hospital that no longer requires acute care, but they can't get step-down care in their local community hospital or they can't get a home care package in their own home? Do you know what I mean? And you can see why how all of these things are somewhat interconnected. On housing, every time you look for a mortgage, when you save up what the bank need for deposit, when you go back, they say you need more for deposit. It's not a complete joke, yeah, because what they're basing it on the presumably how much you need for the property, and if the property's going up, the deposit's going up? I don't know. If Italy decides to accept the deal, then Ireland doesn't have to vote, so they can pretend they didn't vote for it. They're sitting on the fence. We know what they are at. On the issue of tourism, what about the government expecting short-term summer holiday lets to get planning permission and public liability insurance? Where will tourists or children attending the Gaeltacht stay in Donegal? What is the point of Donegal tourism attending tourism fairs if there's nowhere for people to stay in the county? Well, a lot of it would be in the hotel industry as well. They would have a big say in that. And that's not in any way to contradict you. I'm just saying that's why they see the justification. On Johnny's Ranch, I walk around Remelton most evenings and I can honestly say that I would not like to live beside Johnny's Ranch if they're using silent generators. I'm sorry, but they've been sold duds as there's definitely noise from them. There's also a smell, as is from all food establishments. On the roads, traffic is moving very slowly in towards Letterkenny due to roadworks, which are just before the top filling station in Drumkeen. Thanks for telling me. I'm going at that road, of course. Right, listen, thank you so very much indeed for keeping us really busy today. We're back tomorrow morning. We'll kick off with some of the latest news and features. Then we've got your legal questions from 9:30, the Friday panel from 10:00. Have a great day, everybody.